Yeah, so we moved it over onto the
Okay.
other I-Link,
Yeah.
so
I
because she's
mean,
running
my
another.
view on this was that the need for people to back up their data personally was made sufficiently clear to lab users. I mean, I
She did
guess.
admit it.
Right, okay. As long as she admits it, then that's
Yes.
fine. I'm just thinking, you know, sometimes when there's a process error like that, you think, oh, then there's something we should change, like make the sign in bigger red letters. But in our case, I don't think there's anything more we can do, really. So, well, I doubt anybody will do that again because that'll get around.
Yes,
So.
the shock and worry that
Yeah,
I
we've got
think.
the mailing list set up now, isn't there?
Yeah,
So
there's a mailing
everyone
list.
should know about it now.
Yeah,
There
there
was a
was.
mailing list before. They just revived that, right?
Frank went through it, deleted the people that were have gone or whatever and replaced them. So
Right, okay.
the list is now updated.
Yeah, so everyone on that list has now been reminded. Yeah, don't store anything sensitive on, yeah, don't store anything you care about on the machines. So,
Right.
yes.
And we don't know, so there's every chance of this falling over again if it's a hardware thing, right?
Yeah, I
But
mean, there's
with
not much we
the,
can do about that apart from.
yeah, I mean, I did do hard drive check and a
Right.
memory check, and it says there's no problems, but something caused
Yeah.
it to go wrong in the first
Of
place.
course.
So,
Yeah.
we don't know. We don't know. We'll just fingers crossed and hope. Hope, yeah, hope it is just a software thing that we can just fix like that, and that'll be it.
Yeah. So how long does this put you back for? Is it, you know, how much disruption does this cause? Is this a day, 2 days?
We're doing a bit
Day and a
last
bit.
week
Yeah.
at the time, everything.
Yeah.
And then it'll be hopefully no more than, I don't know, what, 20 minutes today to.
Yeah, I mean,
To
yeah, actually do a reinstall.
one we'll try and get done today. Yeah, get Windows back on there, try and get Camtasia on there, and get that tested out, and then that'll be. I think that's everything we need before you can start running the experiments, isn't it?
And I saw a bunch of stuff about software updates. That's
It,
unrelated to this problem, right?
you mean from was that
On the
Joe
iLink.
or was
I
that?
didn't read them. I saw like five messages go back and forth. Maybe they were under the wrong subject header. So
Well, there
anyway,
was
we have,
nothing over
well,
the last week. Joe has produced another version of the model builder and
oh no,
put
I
that
mean the
up.
iLink software.
Well, that was for, well, a few weeks ago, but yeah.
So it's unrelated. It's not that,
No, it's
right?
unrelated.
Okay, good.
And was running because Frank did all that because he then had an experiment, so he's run an experiment. That's all
Yeah.
worked.
Yeah. Did he get his data in, or has this put his schedule back?
He's done his and got
He's done
his,
it.
and
Okay.
yes, and he backs up
Yeah.
anyway.
Right. Well, unfortunate, but it sounds like you guys are well placed for dealing with it, so better you than me.
And
You're
I'm
too
like,
well placed,
yeah, and I did manage to get things working on Monday, so everything went down like on Tuesday morning. So I managed to get everything working on the. Yeah, on Monday to show that the JCT was actually working, collaborating between the two machines.
Yeah.
I wasn't actually, I didn't have the eye tracker stuff working because it was just me running around the lab. So I'll have to, once it's reinstalled, have to actually do a proper,
Oh,
you
so
know,
you need to
proper
borrow
pilot.
somebody's head and mouth and stuff to run it, right?
But it looks like it was doing all the calibration and drift correction things that Ellen was wanting on it. So
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything to add to the software for that part.
So I've got a new trainee who might need amusement at some point. So if you need to borrow a head that talks that doesn't necessarily need to do much else, I'll ask her if she'd mind coming down and helping you out for a while. But I guess Ellen was going to be the
Spare
person,
head.
yeah,
Oh.
your spare head. Right.
Yes, but she's not around, so.
Yeah. So mine is, well, she's actually climbing Ben Nevis today, I think. But she'll be back tomorrow. Her name's Ninka. Did you guys meet her?
Don't think so.
That seems the sort of thing
Doesn't
that
sound
people
familiar.
might find amusing to look at. So I'll see if she'd be willing to.
I did meet someone from another project of yours on Wednesday evening. It was
Oh, who's
H
that?
Heidi.
Oh
She
yeah,
was in
Heidi.
Gesture and
Oh yeah, she's good.
autism. Yeah.
You guys might actually have something in common because she does, well, you know, stuff with video coding and gesturing.
Yeah.
And autism,
And
right?
autism, yeah.
So, okay. Right, what am I writing? Okay, thinking to
She has
volunteer.
been volunteered.
Well, no, I will actually give her the option, but it sounds like the kind of thing where you know, it's quite useful when you're at that stage to see the different kinds of technologies people use.
Yeah, so try and get Camtasia up and running so I can try it out when we've got her coming in. And we'll just sort of do a run through a proper pilot just to
just make sure it starts and finishes when it's meant to and that sort of thing as well.
Yep. Yeah, we'll make sure they can actually pick up the audio signal as well.
Yep.
But it should be the audio signal should be coming out of speakers once it's set up properly. So that should make that slightly easier.
Yes, the bleep was a hardware bleep originally, and so it comes from the PC, which is outside the soundproof box.
Oops. Well, you found that then.
Yeah. But fortunately, the speakers are on the monitors inside the room, so as long as... And what I've done, I've just got it set up, so the whatever the asterisk sound is in Windows is what gets played. So you can just change the sound to whatever you like, just through the Windows control panel.
Okay, so we want one you can pick up using MATLAB or something, right?
Yeah. So I had that running over the weekend. So last week I tried it with a 1 kHz sound, and it could detect it, but it wasn't very clear. Did it with 10 kHz, and it's just really clear. You can tell exactly where the beep is.
Perfect.
So it's just a matter of you basically just play a 10 kHz sound over the speech, and then just compare the two signals basically. So I've got a little script for doing it. So.
Perfect. So you're going to bank the script someplace?
Yeah.
Tell
us
how to run it?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, no problem.
Because we won't know. Right. Well, that all sounds good.
What else? Well, you have altered the task program. It's to put the little eye icon and the mouse.
Yeah. The one in Jeff's install should have that now. We'll double check it when we install on the live tracking machines, but yeah, it should be updated with that now.
Rather than just a blob, Ellen wanted something that looked more like an eye, so that you knew that was the eye.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so we've got like a big circle with a white circle in the middle for an eye, and we've got like a rectangle with two like rectangle buttons on it for a mouse.
Uh-huh, okay.
Sorry.
Very nice, very pretty. It doesn't get in the way of seeing what's underneath?
Oh, no, they're the same size as the original blobs, basically. Mm. I think the mouse is slightly bigger, but it's not, you know,
it's not
hugely
bad.
Bigger. So.
Uh-huh. I can see why that's useful.
Yeah, and if it gets a very problem in the pilot, I can easily reduce the size of whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's not too hard.
Want it a reasonable size so that if they're looking at it, we know they're looking at it. So it has to be a reasonable target for the tracking purposes.
Yeah.
Although if you had a big thing and it was jiggling around like anybody's business, like real eye track traces, then you might find that a little bit disconcerting. I mean, small things you kind of expect to jiggle around, right?
Mm-hmm. I suppose a larger, more oscillation appears. It's not. I mean, it isn't that. It isn't that big. So
it looks like it's quivering. You know. Yeah, but well, that's all fine. Yeah. What else? You're saying Joe with a model builder.
Yes, he's produced another version that doesn't have the overlap problem.
The
collision, so polygons now don't.
Oh, that's
overlap.
Good.
Marlowe's discovered something strange about the orientation of parallelograms from when it was constructed to when it appears in the actual task. But I think that might be something to do with the original configuration and the parts that weren't the same across the two. So I'll check that out to see if it really is a problem or not.
Okay.
And basically, the parallelogram was appearing in a sort of as a mirror image of what it was like in the model builder.
Really?
Just totally flipped in a mirror image, not rotated, so it wasn't anything to do with rotation.
Just the parallelogram.
Yeah, just the parallelogram. So. Not entirely sure. It must be some way of how the vertices were described or defined in one way compared to something else.
Right. Okay. So your job in this is to ensure that it actually is a bug and then pass it to Joe?
Joe, yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. I mean, this geometry stuff is really tricky if you don't do the fold the boxes stuff in your head well. So I can imagine.
Well,
because I could get it backwards easily, you know. Mm-hmm. And So it is just as well for you to check this.
The other thing we've done is looked at, not for this current experiment, but for future, when we've got to build bizarre parts like aircraft wings and things, something like Xfig can output the vertex points for creating the actual polygons in the first place. Because the model builder assumes that there's an existing set of
So you need
parts.
To draw them in something.
So you need to draw them in.
Oh, so yeah, I suggested you do that in Xfig. Is that a reasonable thing to do or no?
Yeah, yeah. So you can do them in Xfig, export them as SVG, and you just get a comma, get a list of XY coordinates. And then I've just written a little script that turns those XY coordinates into a part.
Yeah, so this falls down completely if NineMegan can't run Xfig. So you better check that with them, right?
Well, the thing is, it's SVG, so long as I've got something that will output SVG.
Okay, but they may need help finding the something if they can't do Xfig, I suppose.
Yeah, so I'll have a look at that, but there must be plenty of Windows things that like output SVG.
Microsoft, though? I mean, well...
I know Adobe and things have packages that do it, but obviously they're like a few
hundred
pounds. They're paid,
yeah.
But I'd be very surprised if there wasn't a free package for doing it. I have a feeling that the Amaya, the W3C browser, does it. I have a feeling that can actually edit SVG files.
Okay. So I wouldn't do any work to try and find out what will output SVG. Just ask them, look, you know, say you need something that does SVG. And then if they come back and say, huh, then you may need to poodle around a bit looking for something. But, you know, let them say they've got a problem before you spend time trying to figure out what'll do it.
It's not an immediate problem anyway, but I thought it was worth, before Joe disappears, just checking that the model builder is not restricted to just doing the tangrams or something. So it does look like it's...
I can imagine there being shapes that you could construct in SVG format that would fox the model builder in some way. I don't know, I mean, because you don't have specs about what sorts of shapes are allowed, right?
No, but as long as they're solid polygons, it should be all right.
Right. It doesn't matter whether they're convex or concave in funny ways.
Well, hopefully that's not what the parallelogram problem is, because it does have some angles and things.
I've created a convex part just in Xfig.
It just happened
to be a convex part that I was playing with, so it hadn't lot of fun. It didn't have any self-intersections, so that might be a problem. So I'll have to check that. But
would we want, by self-intersection you mean?
Yeah, by a part that crosses over itself.
We'll only be working to see with sort of solid, obvious polygons and those parts. Because they'll have to have a central point anyway for rotation. Well,
but by self-intersection here, I'll draw here, if I can find the right end of the pen. Do you mean something like that?
Yeah, that sort of thing, yeah. So.
And you can rule out something like that, right? Because that's two parts for you.
I would consider that two parts, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, some rainy day, you might want to think about, well, I don't know. I mean, we can fix it if it turns out those parts. It's not urgent now. I think this isn't important enough.
Yeah, so for now, we'll just assume that non-intersecting. At the moment, the SVG stuff can output ones which aren't closed polygons, but once they actually turn up in the parts list, it creates a closed polygon just by linking an endpoint to the start point. So as long as they're drawn well enough, it should be all right. Suppose let NineMegan find an SVG. Find something that does SVG, and then we'll see if there's any problems.
But if they have trouble, you know, half an hour Googling and helping them is probably worthwhile. Because sometimes people, I mean, actually, I wouldn't expect them to have any trouble finding something because JP's quite up with all these things.
It might be worth just checking what software they are using, because it might create outputs slightly different from Xfig.
Well, let's encourage them not to use any software that might have idiosyncratic ideas about what SVG is, she says delicately.
Microsoft version of SVG or something.
Ooh, that I wasn't going to say. I have no idea whether they have idiosyncratic SVG output or whether. But the track record on some of the other standards has not, there have been slightly strange things about it, so. But Amaya, you know, I mean, that should be.
That should be fun. Yeah, I think it does SVG output. So I can easily double check if my Megan can't find anything.
Mm-hmm. I haven't looked through other mail. I did see something from Marloes. Is there anything they're waiting on from us that is a problem, or are they reasonably happy at the moment?
I think they're not waiting anything from us. They've dumped the pilot studies that they generated based on the task with their English participants or English speakers.
Oh, they've done the pilots.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
But they haven't done anything with it other than
dump the data. Where is it dumped?
They dumped it on the BSCW server, but I haven't moved it. I copied it onto the.
Well, that's okay. You know, we're not using that much space if it's just for interim, and they have to get interim somewhere.
Yeah.
We had a brief discussion just before I left about this idea of exchanging data by FireWire drive, and I don't know if that ever got resolved, but
nothing further is.
You know, that's not fast enough for little things like this. So I think BSCW is the right way to exchange these. We just have to wipe this stuff off and keep separate copies after that.
And I've sent a thing off to Marloes, trying to encourage her again to register for the CSV and.
The CBS.
What the CBS and what to do and which bit of software I use. It seems to be quite easy.
Oh, so you're managing that okay, and you haven't run into CBS before?
No.
Okay. Well, good.
Yes and no, as in, yes, it's new and no.
Yeah. Well, that's reassuring.
So far, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, he's sitting on the next desk.
Yes. And I am just using it through a Windows bolt-on sort of piece of software.
Yeah, that was easy enough to install, though, wasn't it?
Straightforward, and then
copy and paste stuff out of the wiki. So
right-click things and Windows Explorer. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, she'll have to use the CVS eventually because we don't really have a good way of doing this otherwise.
I double checked, and when I could access the CVS from home when I was working from home last week, Thursday, I managed to get in and just check the stuff and make sure it was all make sure I could access it. So they shouldn't have any trouble accessing it once they've got the logins.
Well, that's it. We'll never see him here again. Watch, I'll find out he's got a better computer at home as well. Right?
Not yet. <I'm>
Right. And what about the project as a whole? Is there anything that Wood or anybody is after that we aren't supplying? Not at the moment,
right? Not at the moment. The only thing that's been going around is the version of the flyer. I don't know what real purpose of these little folded up A4 flyers.
They're critical to the success of a project, so.
Are they just for distribution at conferences and things they're doing? Yeah.
In general places, but yeah, I wouldn't worry too much about it unless they.
Well, I'm not really bothering, yeah. But that's what's circulating. The group as a whole at the moment. I've sorted out travel, etc., to Munich. For Ellen, John, and myself, and we're all off on the 14th of December. Mm-hmm. Coming back on the Friday.
And John's going.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. It'll be useful for the WP7 stuff, so. Well, while you do that, I'll be trained in how to hire people. So.
That's weird. How to hire or how to interview, is that?
Both.
Both, right.
So, is there anything else? What have you got on for the rest of the week besides getting this stuff up and running again?
Once I've tried out the Camtasia stuff, obviously, if there's any problems, gotta try and fix them. If there isn't any problems, the next thing I'm working on is the GDF stuff. So I've put on a DTD and a sample XML file on the wiki for the GDF. So based on some stuff you put on there on the GDF specification.
Right. So are you concerned about it that I should be looking at it, or are you happy with it? I mean, I sort of wrote the initial draft of it, I suppose.
Yeah, well, I changed a couple of things from your original draft. So there's no longer a separate thing for creating new parts. So I've just put a start and end time on each part. So that, you had a thing called, I think it was mold or something you said, which was sort of to create a new part, as an action to create a new part. But I gave each part a start time and an end time, so you can see when the parts were created. So I'm not sure if you want to keep the mold or not.
I'll have to look. I can't remember how this works now, because that was a while ago.
Yeah, it's just the GDF specification page on the wiki.
So.
I'm trying to put in justification for the changes I made on the page. So. But I'll send it out for review, so anyone who's going to be using the format can have a look at it.
Yeah, and you'll get nothing back unless I look at it, right? So, best for me to do that. I mean, it's really good that you're putting things out for review and saying like why for stuff. But we also don't want to burn too much of your time recording stuff that nobody's ever going to look at necessarily. So, I mean, this might be a good case for it, or it might be that you should just, like, you know, talk to me about the stuff if I happen to be around at the time that you're doing it, and not. So, if the writing stuff down on the wiki gets to be too high a proportion of things, then you don't necessarily want to do it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I think it's great to have the records, and that's really important, especially in big dispersed groups. But this is kind of a smaller group, so you know we can do things more informally where you feel the wikis are getting in the way of things.
Yeah, so. Well, the one thing I'm saying with this stuff, I mean, it's helpful. It was helpful for me to put it up on the wiki, because I could actually think about it as I put it up and say, well, this is why I want to do things this way.
Oh yeah, well, so. If it aids you in thinking to write it down, then definitely write it down. Because, yeah, we want clear thinking. I can't actually remember how it worked with the mold. I mean, I wanted to make sure that... No, I can't even remember. So I'll look at it.
Yeah, fair enough.
But I'm sure it's fine, because it's just my memory of things.
I'll have to get to grips with Camtasia properly.
Yeah.
To generate a little sort of introductory video, I suppose, for instructional purposes at the beginning of the experiment, so people will be able to see.
Oh, yeah.
And so that the, you know, example movements and things like that would be.
Yeah. So is that going to have a voiceover, or is it? We had discussions before you started about whether it should be completely silent, so that they could use in case we ever wanted to do this
in Dutch as
in
well.
In Dutch, yeah. And so you know, you could just have. Sort of, well, I think we discussed having it with an English voiceover, having it with no voiceover, and then having it just with cartoon noises or something like boof, or, you know, when things break.
Right, no, that must have been before me, so.
I may be imagining
it. Well, I know on Camtasia, if you've got a Camtasia project, you can have the video and audio stored separately. In which case,
so we could produce a Dutch voiceover for the same thing.
So we just send the Dutch team, the video and our audio, and then they can easily create their audio out of.
Exactly. Yeah. So I mean, I think it'd be more sensible just to do the video part of it first, and then you add the voiceover afterwards.
Yeah.
Rather than trying to do it all at once.
Yeah. The other issue is if we do a voiceover, does that affect the language that the people choose to use, so that might be another reason for not doing that.
Anything with the voice, you know, if you start talking about, talking about the parts, is this naming them or anything like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe that was another reason for just having.
Boof. Yes. Okay. or no noise. In fact, I think it's probably
Or ding for you got it, or I don't know.
Probably actually not even the sound effects, because otherwise they'll expect that in the real experiment, and that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So well, if they move a piece and it breaks and they don't hear this crash and they go, oh, what's what's happened? Is that really what happened?
Well, you need some way to make sure that they actually notice the thing you're trying to explain to them if there's no voice.
Well,
one thing that Camtasia can do, you can have little videos on the bottom. I don't know if you've got any cameras for doing that, but you could like have videos with people clicking on the mouses and sort of, or whatever else.
Or you could just point to, you know, have a great big arrow that points at the two pieces that broke.
Yes, yeah. I think it can generate.
You can generate like callouts and whatever. So, I'm like, yeah, I'm sure there must be a way of putting big arrows or whatever.
Yeah. So you're going to clear her however you do this with Ellen, right? Because she's the one that has thoughts about the language and stuff.
Yes. But in our discussion, we haven't mentioned, it was assumed there'd be a voiceover. But.
Well, we might hear that there was a question about whether there are.
I'll do that. Mm-hmm. Yes, because we've got to think of the instructions and sort of basic introduction to it all as well. So.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I did email my Megan to ask if they had a set of instructions they'd given their.
I bet mine was just chalked to him.
Probably. I suspect so, because I haven't had a reply back.
I think it's really up to us to.
Yeah, to invent it. It was just in case they had.
Is
something
it hard? You don't want to give them the specification, you know, because that's in too highfalutin a language, mm-hmm. but it can't be that hard to generate something like this.
No, it should be straightforward enough, I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh, on my holidays, we encountered a children's toy shop where there were tangrams. And my son reminded me that he hasn't been able to find his tangram set in a while.
Oh, right, you want to give back?
Well, not if you guys are using it.
It's not.
Do you find it helpful to have it?
Yeah, well, actually, I could probably just photocopy the manual.
Oh, but it's so tactile to have little metal bits. If you're using it, keep it. He's got plenty of toys. If you're not, right. If you're not using it, then I'll take it back.
Right. Hopefully need it for more than another week or two anyway. So
yeah.
As long as you can hold off.
It's not a worry. The lad has plenty of toys.
I was looking at the complexity sort of aspect of the tangrams and that. Booklet. It's not quite that they just get harder. They kind of have pages of similar types.
Oh, similar types, uh-huh.
Yeah, so one page will have sort of parts that are kind of similar to each other, and then you move over and it's a different almost type of design or style.
Yeah.
So it's not quite as progressive in complexity as.
Right, so how are you going to get your complexity ratings? Google.
Google.
Is there a big Tangram community that ranks these things? Like, you know, that's just one booklet that came with one mm-hmm. set of Tangrams.
I'll try. You never know what's
out
there.
Or is it obvious, like, when you look at these things?
Well, I'm hoping the Dutch input will allow us to sort of have a rough idea of what was of a suitable complexity for the task.
But that still won't tell you. Well, how many tangrams are there that they're using? 15 or something? No, not even.
No, not even that. Of the relevant type to what we're wanting to use, probably 3.
Uh-huh.
We've to generate 16 in total.
So that's not going to tell you anything about relative complexity. That's just going to tell you where in the span you want to be. Mm-hmm. You still need some kind of scale for these things.
Yeah,
if you look at them, do you just know?
No.
No.
Well, I don't. I'm not.
What about him?
No.
Mr. Geometry. I mean, you know. Can you tell us by looking at these how hard people find them? Or?
I wouldn't know. No.
Right.
No.
Okay. Well.
I'll try the good old Google and see if there's if there are some sort of ranking sites or.
Who in psychology already uses tangrams that's still around? I mean. People have been using tangrams for ages, so there must be somebody with a folk wisdom you can contact.
I'll try and find out. I don't know offhand.
Right. I only know ancient papers, so like late 80s. Do people still use tangrams?
I've not encountered them.
Oh, so we're very old-fashioned.
Or maybe they just don't use anything like that, I suppose.
Well, there was stuff in the 70s and the 80s, right?
So. But I'm not sure if anything's happened since then.
Since then. Right. Wow. The old tasks are the best. So I'm not going to let that worry me. So sorry, that was, I think, a big diversion. And we were talking about what you were going to do next after all this stuff was up. And I was going to look at the GDF spec. Are the rest of the, is the rest of what you're to do with that software fairly clear? Because this is about the analysis.
Yeah, yeah.
You really only need Robin, right?
Yeah. So I'm just working with Robin what analysis we need to get out of the GDF format. So I'm going to basically, I've got, the Jest Analyzer has got the basis for a ASCII to GDF converter. So what I'm going to do is actually create an output, a GDF output part to it. Because the moment any output's the video, but it does have internal structures to make it easy to do the XML.
Yep, yeah.
So that's what we're going to look at. And then once I've done that, I can look at the whatever analysis we need to get done out of the GDF.
Yeah, because there were all these issues about how you calculate II lag and, you know, what other analyses we want out of this that aren't settled. But I think, you know, Robin is the person who knows the most about what's required there. And I can imagine it's going to take a little while to... I can imagine, you know, so that might be the focus of discussions next week or something, right, that...
Home in parameters and choose the right settings.
So you might want to try and come, if you get that far, try and come equipped with a list of the kinds of things you want out of it, and so we can look through and see. Alan might have views on what kinds of things once we have a list, right?
So I'm sure she'll have views on it.
But it'd be good to, you know, make sure once we have a list of the things that we think we're getting out of it, that it matches her intentions for what we were supposed to get out of it. So, you know, if we do talk about that, then it might be nice to have her along for it.
I haven't found it physically yet, but a reference to a 92 paper, it's in the Royal Proceedings or something or other, somewhere, based on an experiment that had blocks, a model, blocks of parts, and then an area where people had to build, you know, replicate the model out of the parts.
Yeah.
Just one person at a time, of course, but it did involve eye movements and monitoring where they're looking compared to their hand movements. And
Who was that then?
Ballard.
Okay.
Back in 92.
Are they still in the business?
Yes, I think so.
Where are they?
I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, they might have the folk wisdom on the complexity, right?
Yeah.
So, 92's not that long ago.
So
well, it is really. Is it a paper you can get?
That's what I'll have to try and find out. So.
Well, they still do interlibrary loans and stuff, so.
If not, the National Library's going to have it.
Uh-huh, yep. So do we think next week that's what we're going to talk about? Because we don't want to ask Ellen ahead of time if she wants to come along for a discussion about...
She's not here next week anyway.
Oh, well, that's fine then.
It's next Wednesday or Thursday before she's back.
Okay. Oh, yeah, because her stuff is getting blocked off the mailing list because she's not mailing from her normal account.
Oh, is that what... Yeah, she's got a Yahoo account or something. Forwarded.
And I can't figure out any way to just approve messages from her without her subscribing at that account, so.
If things haven't been getting through well.
There's only one message so far. It didn't say much.
Anything else? I think that's it. I'll get working on the campaign stuff this week and then. So once we've got some idea about what analysis you want out of this, I can think about whether the GDF's got everything we need in it, what analysis we can pull out of it.
There's the provisional list of what we need on the wiki anyway.
I'll double check the GDF specification against that just to make sure it's got everything you say you need from that.
But I don't think that list is our final word on things. And
I added things to it.
Oh well, maybe it is then.
Well, I don't know when you last looked at it, but. I added it. It was something in the last 2 weeks anyway.
I don't think I was fully paying attention to that. I mean, I'm not going to have views on this anyway. What I'm really worried about is making sure that there's no big surprises for Ellen and JP, you know, when they suddenly discover that they're assuming some analysis is in there and we didn't put it in. You know, because now is the time for us to be figuring out what we want out of that data and and getting you to write the stuff, or getting JP to write the one-dimensional analyses that he was talking about.
Yeah, because I mean, we've got all the data in the ASCII format at the moment, and it's just a matter of what data we need to pull out of that into the GDF so we can actually do the proper analysis. Because I think all the analysis is going to be run off the GDF format, because we've decided that if we're looking at the dynamic regions and whatever else, it has to be
dynamic
GDF.
Regions that I think might cause a bit of trouble.
Yeah, which is why we have to do it off the GDF as opposed to the EDF format.
Oh, right. Okay. So actually, you're breaking this down into two steps now. One is just straight extraction from the ASCII, and the other one is any post-analysis that adds information by analyzing it. Is that?
Yeah. So the GDF, it's got the stuff from the EDF, such as the ASCII file, from things like the mouse movements and things like that.
Yeah, it's
and
just then, anything that's got shoved through the eye tracker.
Yeah. And then on top of that, the GDF will also have information such as, right, at this point in time, they were looking at the new parts area, or they
Okay, that is post-analysis.
So the idea is the GDF is going to have that sort of information in it, and then also because it's an XML file, we can then do XSLT or whatever onto it to get extract whatever bits of data you need for whichever bits of analysis you're trying to do from it. Right. Mm-hmm.
Oh well, that all sounds good. So I've got one thing to check and one person to ask if she'll volunteer to be ahead. And as far as I know, that's it for me. So yeah, I have to explain. For one of my other things, there's now a specific wiki page that says stuff Gene has to do. And I'm beginning to think that this is quite a good idea, because I worry about not doing the stuff people expected me. Much more than the other way around, right?
Well, I think according to the latest documentation, you're down for 5% of your 15 months on this project or something.
What documentation?
Some JAST report.
Oh, okay.
Officially.
Well, it doesn't actually make its way into my salary,
into
I'm
reality.
Afraid. Uh-huh. So. Right. But yeah, I mean, I do spend time talking to you guys. So you're getting something out of me. Well, and we'll use some of the software Craig develops will be useful for my other projects. So it's not a completely one-way thing.
I hope you'll get something out of it as well.
I happen to just, you know, like working. Keeps me running into childcare.
It's better than that, is it right? Okay.
Last week was interesting. one of the highlights family-wise was going to Arcachon, which is this huge sand dune on the southwest coast of France. So it's like, I can't remember how, I'm not very good with measurements, but anyway, my husband says it's the biggest sand dune in the world. So you climb up on this flight of steps and then sort of put a line on the top of the sand dune.
they put steps up over a sand dune.
Weird about these things because it's amazing how much sand a small children can shift. Right?
So it's like standing in
it. Or big guys, right? You know. So, you know, in the UK, you don't go on sand dunes, right? Because there won't be any sand dunes left if you do. There doesn't seem to be quite so many people there. Mm-hmm. But you still would have thought that they wouldn't really want people standing on the top of it, unless they combine with great big bulldozers.
Yeah, well, in the middle of the night, do they couldn't shovel it back up?
We don't know how this works. So, but anyway, it was quite fun. We did the very French thing, so it's just the French countryside. They didn't have anything except wine and ducks.
Wine and ducks, right?
Yeah. I don't eat duck, so I stuck to the wine.
Goat cheese as well.
Oh, goat cheese, yeah. And I brought back some walnut oil. I could only get a huge bottle, and my husband's gonna probably be willing to try it once, and then I'll have to. So if anybody needs walnut oil, then. but it was good, you know. Markets open in the morning, everything closes between 12 and 3. No sense trying to do anything, which suits
proper
me fine. So, you know, we actually went to the market, and then I'd prepare some nice meal, you know, and then
not
sit around, play some badminton. I got to cook for once, so it's good.
So you're a keen badminton player?
But my son likes badminton. So, well, you know, as sports go, it's about as far as I go.
well, I'm looking for lots of people.